You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, y'all. Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start today with Antonio Brown. You think Antonio Brown is crazy? What about John Gruden and Mike Mayock? This Oakland Raiders Antonio Brown frostbitten feet helmet saga is dumb, dumber, and dumbest. Rank them however you want, but here's my order. Mayock, the Raiders general manager, is plain ordinary dumb. He epitomizes the Peter principle. He's been promoted to his level of incompetence. It happens to all of us. We're all just one job promotion away from being in over our heads. When this saga concludes, Mayock can return to being a solid football broadcaster. Brown, the Raiders' frostbitten, helmet-phobic receiver, is dumber. A sixth-round pick out of Central Michigan, Brown has made more money than he could have ever rightfully imagined. I don't blame him for being delusional. He wasn't prepared for wealth, fame, or emotional maturity. Like a lot of modern athletes hooked on social media, AB is a narcissistic self-worshipper who has his own mega church on Instagram. Dumbest is John Gruden. He's so full of himself, he hired a general manager whose career in the NFL consisted of a cup of coffee with the Steelers and the Giants as a player in the early 1980s and as a TV broadcaster slash draft analyst the previous 15 years. Some people think Gruden only hired Mayock because Mel Kiper, Todd McShay, and Colin Cowherd all said no. Gruden is so full of himself, he ignored all the public information available on Antonio Brown, traded for him, and handed him a reworked contract. In March, during a national interview with ESPN's Jeff Darlington, Brown made it clear he would be good with retirement. Last September, ESPN's Jesse Washington wrote a long story detailing Brown's addiction to Instagram and off-the-field drama. Brown publicly threatened violence against Washington for writing the story. But the biggest red flag Gruden ignored was the Steelers' willingness to trade the NFL's most productive receiver for a third-round pick. The modern-day Jerry Rice for a three. Come on, man. When a five-year-old S-Class Mercedes is on the market for the same price as a five-year-old Prius, you better check the Carfax.
You better.
There's something wrong with the motor and the tires. Gruden looks worse than AB. Gruden is the guy with a $100 million contract who sounds every bit as delusional as AB.
Yeah, I don't know what anybody's writing or what anybody thinks, but this foot injury wasn't his fault. You know, this was a total accident. It really wasn't his fault, and it's a serious injury. I know some people are smarting at it, but it's really not a laughing matter. The guy was hurt. He was innocent. He didn't do anything wrong.
Gruden sounds like A.C. Collins the day police put cuffs on O.J. in Brentwood. And later, Gruden promised not to rest until he found the real AB.
And we hope Antonio is back here soon because he's exciting to be around. I'm excited. I got some plays for him. I hope we can start calling him.
I have a lot of confidence that he's one of the premier competitors I've ever been around. And I got a feeling he would play with no helmet. It's how much he loves to play.
Gruden needs to stop. He traded away Khalil Mack and Amari Cooper and traded for a guy who doesn't really want to play football. Gruden is the dumbest person in the Raiders saga, and that's saying a whole lot. All right, joining the desk now are two former NFL head coaches, Eric Mangini, and making his first Speak for Yourself FS1 appearance, Jeff Fisher. Marcellus, I'll start with you.
Yeah.
Who looks worse here in the AB saga, Brown or Gruden?
I don't think either one looks bad. I'm going to be real. I think the news is splashing.
Holy cow, we stopped the presses. No one looks bad.
No. I mean, well, look, where the rubber meets the road in terms of what I consider bad is in production. So all this is just noise. All this is just smoke. I'm looking at this situation like as preseason. And we're talking about AB, who's missing training camp other than two practices, and he has his reasoning. And then we're looking at John Gruden, who has a 10-year contract, which is longer than six of the 10 most active coaches in terms of their tenure right now. That means his contract terms are longer than most guys are even going to be allowed to coach. Even if you win a Super Bowl, you can ask Pete Carroll about that, who hadn't even been there for 10 years in Seattle. So I think right now there's a noise level that is higher than ever. But it goes both ways. This is the same classic hits that the media always plays in the preseason. There's two ways this goes. If something good happens, oh, it doesn't matter. It's just the preseason. You know, Detroit Lions were 4-0 the same year they went 0-16. Remember that? Okay. So all this is great. Oh, they're going to go undefeated. They're going to win the Super Bowl. No, they're not. And then the flip happens. If something bad goes on in the preseason, we blow it so out of proportion and forget that this has to meet reality. And right now, they're not in that place. So I don't think either one looks bad. If you're forced, gun to head, say, who has the most to prove? It's Antonio Brown, because he doesn't have the same guarantees and securities as a John Gruden.
Well, he has a lot of guarantees. And to me, this is Antonio Brown. And to criticize Mayock or John for trading for Antonio Brown for a third-round draft pick, to me, that's a pretty small barrier for a guy who's had
$30 million in new money.
But he's also had 100-yard receiving years in a row. He had led the league in receptions with 15 touchdowns last year. So the production and trying to defend against him over the course of time, he is a really special player. So to get him at that rate, that was a pretty unique opportunity. And John has dealt with guys that have had character issues in the past, and he's done a good job with it. So I understand why he would look at that risk reward and think that it was suitable. I mean, Odell Beckham goes for
$30 million.
Odell Beckham goes for a number one draft pick. I mean, that's a much higher price for a guy who isn't as productive as Antonio Brown. You know, in terms of the injury to his feet, I don't understand how that could be an accident. I'm gonna just have to take John's word on that. That to me, I don't understand that aspect of it. And the helmet issue, look, that's not going to get resolved in any way besides the league is going to have you wear one of the helmets that you're supposed to wear. So the quicker Antonio Brown comes to that realization, the better. But John really has no alternative but to support him in this, because ideally you got to get him to Sunday.
I'll agree with Coach. Loved your opening monologue, but I
a little
did
rough,
not
little
write
rough.
It. You didn't have anything to do with it, Coach Gruden. So, you know, it's way too early. It's just way too early. I mean, you got two issues. I mean, we would be concerned if you got one thing with the foot going on, and now you got the helmet thing. Who knows? Maybe the helmet thing's kind of a buy yourself some time until the foot gets better, so that guy can get on the practice field. But the bottom line is 74 touchdowns and 11,000 yards, and he's a good player. So let's let this thing play itself out. They're getting to know each other a little bit. I'm confident that Coach Gruden hasn't had his official training camp meeting where they go through the rules of what you do and don't do as far as phones in the meeting rooms and tweeting here and tweeting there. You know, they'll get all that stuff straight. But I think we're jumping out there way, way too soon.
Two guys with long coaching tenures in the NFL. One guy played in the NFL for 10 years. I'm sitting here blown away, because what I think I'm hearing from you all is like, man, if you knew what the kind of crazy stuff that goes on in the NFL, this doesn't really shock you all.
A little desensitized over here?
Is that what I'm hearing?
I mean, we left ourselves 2 hours a day for stuff that came up that you didn't anticipate. But again, well, let's just say this. Ask this question. If they don't do the Khalil Mack trade, or they don't trade the receiver to Dallas, and they're both on the roster, granted, they may not have Antonio Brown, but if both those guys are on the roster, are there big issues? Mm.
You know, look, I take it like this, Coach. The reason I sound desensitized maybe to someone who's outside this locker room is you could go back to when the Patriots and their demise was predicted, what was this, in 2017 in the playoffs. Oh, it's crumbling in Foxborough. And everyone ran with that. They've been to two Super Bowls and won one since. And I'm just trying to tell you what
we're talking about the Raiders.
Look, I don't give a damn who you're talking about. The Raiders have a lot of championships. A history of winning.
Dysfunction.
And not of recent history. But let me tell you what AB is standing on. AB is standing on one. There is actually a real objective reason why he's objecting to this new helmet. There's a vision bar that a lot of receivers complain about. You got to get used to it. AB will get used to it. I think AB will be in camp sooner than later. But the other part is the NFL. And AB is calling BS on the NFL, and I'm glad he is. Because the NFL has now come up with the new standard of testing, which is recent because of the lawsuit settlement in 2016. There's a 5-year relationship between the union and NFL, blah, 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 boring. But here's the thing. The NFL gave these players a transitional year. You know why they gave them a transitional year? We want to ease you into these new helmets. Are you kidding me? NFL, you don't, 1 year, you want us to go out there and play with a helmet that is substandard, and if we get brain damage in that 1 year, it's okay? And if not, oh, we have to switch helmets? You know what
Marcellus,
it was?
If there's 1,700 players, one guy is refusing to wear the new helmet.
One guy is refusing it because he has the stones. One guy is not the only one objecting to it, but he won't go. He's the only one going to this measure. What about that transitional year? What about the fact that his helmet has been proven not to be substandard by the new procedures? Except we're not going to go back that far to test these helmets. Why won't you? Just to protect yourself in lawsuits, not based on the integrity of the game or how this guy feels in that performance.
I think I'm more in line with Jeff in the sense that the helmet feels like a little bit of something to buy time to get away from the feet and get away from all the other stuff as opposed to... Look, maybe his motivations are that pure and are that principled that he wants to take a stand here, but it just feels a little bit more like if he's dealing with the helmet issue and fighting that, at least everybody's not talking about the other thing, which is the feet that he really has no control over until it gets healed.
And I tend to agree with you all. I know these two guys well. Jeff, I'm assuming you have kids.
Yes, sir.
This sounds like a kid with a little smoke screen. He's created one. He got busted smoking pot, and he's now deflecting to something else so he doesn't have to answer those questions. And he's got Gruden. Now, oh, it's a total accident. AB did something stupid. He's burned up his feet and jeopardized his season. And John Gruden's out here having to explain and rationalize this. He can't even install the offense. When you just give a guy this much new money and he's this kind of productive player, your whole offense is built around him. And he's too immature to handle this helmet thing, his own health. You know, I was talking with someone that played for John Gruden and knows him well. And John Gruden's offense is built on a receiver going over the middle on 3rd and 4 and 5. And this person who knows Gruden well, knows the offense well, is like, I just don't know if AB wants to be the guy going over the middle on 3rd and 5 because John Gruden's offense is built for that. There's a premier receiver, 3rd and 4. We're coming to you over the middle. You're going to have to take that hit. I don't think AB wants to live that life.
But I think as long as AB is on the field, there's going to be two people dealing with him. Mm-hmm. So some other receiver can go over, you know, if that's really the principle that they're trying to get to. He is such a problem from a defensive standpoint that you have to game plan for him every down that he's on the field. And that opens up things for other guys. So even if he's not as productive as he should be because of his feet early in the season, his presence alone will push coverage to him in ways that other guys can't get done.
If you think AB doesn't want the ball on 3rd down, you're crazy. And if they got an offense that requires him to go over the middle to get it, and he has a problem with it at 30, 31 years old, wouldn't shock me.
So what was your defensive call? Over cover two?
Yeah.
I'll right. tell you what to do, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. It's been said that John Gruden's first play of the regular season has more words on it than your whole script does, okay, in his offense.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a reason he wants him there and running and doing things and huddling and going through the stuff because it's not an easy offense. It's not a player-friendly offense. It's a phenomenal offense. He does a great job with it. But you understand why he wants the receiver there with the quarterback and wants to go. And then you look at that foot thing and, well, it was an accident. It wasn't his fault. Okay, well, what's he telling us there? Well, the guy didn't go off on the 4th of July and blow 3 of his fingers off because he was playing with fireworks after he was told not to. Okay, he went over to try to take care of his body and somebody did something wrong and he can't practice. So I just think it's way too soon to be spending this much time on all this and things are going to settle. And now if AB decides to retire, then I'll take credit for your opening monologue. Yeah.
I already know you all's answer to this, but I'm going to ask the question anyway. Too soon for the Raiders to be thinking of an exit strategy here?
Absolutely. The grand eraser is in AB's hands in terms of his catches, his production, once he hits the field, once they show that chemistry, once they get in sync. This is not even noise. This is forgotten. You don't even have the residue of this moment if they hit the regular season and do something. If this team makes the playoffs, it's kumbaya right now for the Raiders.
Okay, let's say AB shows up and is just as productive. He's AB. But a coach is trying to establish a culture. And your guy you just paid, who's going to be the centerpiece of your offense, to me, has disrupted the culture. Instantly, day one.
As far as we think.
Yeah.
We don't know what's going on in his building. We don't know whether he's sitting there talking to his team and talk with AB present, talking about what their philosophy is going to be and how they're going to handle this. We don't know what's going on behind those closed doors. John's experienced enough to know how to handle these things.
And it's one of these things with a player who is challenging, you'll deal with that the 6 days out of the week to get him to that seventh day, if he's productive enough on that seventh day. And even the other players, as much as they may resent it and not like it, they also know that if we can get him to Sunday, then they're going to be really happy that he's part of it. Look, that's not necessarily what I inherently believe in, but there's a lot of guys that do believe in that. There's a lot of guys that handle those personalities really well, and there's a lot of guys that have benefited substantially and teams that have benefited substantially from having players like that. So now they're going through some growing pains. They're getting to know each other. They're trying to figure out how to operate in a totally different environment for AB and obviously John with AB. But if they can get him to Sunday, I think everybody's going to be happy there.
All right, help me and the viewers out then. Are there three guys on every team just like AB? Two guys, how
just like AB?
Yeah,
hell no.
Not in terms of production, in terms of
in your own ways, are they AB-ish?
Yeah,
absolutely. Like, there's this balancing act that's always between personality and production. If your production is way up there, then we're gonna have to deal with whatever comes with that personality. And sometimes you get it in a beautiful form, where you get a highly productive player who causes no problems.
Julio Jones,
Tom Brady. You get a lot of guys who are just buying in. But if you're AB, these guys have learned from the greats of yesterday. If you look at, like, the top NFL players ever, just think about how it ended and how it's going.
Lawrence Taylor.
Mm-hmm. All right, Lawrence Taylor, right? Barry Sanders walked away from the game and even had to write a check to say, I'm leaving the game. You look at a Joe Montana, the house he built, he couldn't even lay in the master bedroom. They trade him away. Tom Brady, the king of suppression, got to just keep giving money back to the team building, and he doesn't see necessarily all the results of that except another Super Bowl, but I don't know how we did it. Oh, because of me. These guys are learning, like, you know what? Don't just sit on things. Like, express yourself. And AB, to me, is expressing himself in his way, and he's doing it best on the field. You getting caught up in this. This dude is Hall of Fame bound without doubt.
Here's the other thing to look for. Have any of his teammates said anything, gone on the record regarding it?
No, only Pittsburgh linemen do that.
Okay. All right, but none of the Raider teammates.
They haven't even met him. haven't spent much
good.
Time.
Well, let's
who's
just
AB?
Watch it and wait, see what happens.
Is this commonplace? Is this, did we miss this?
Yeah, each locker room has personalities like this, maybe not as strong as AB, and each head coach has a different philosophy on how many guys they'll have like that. I usually try to set your locker room up where you've got enough strong, positive personalities so that if you bring in some guys that are challenging, they offset. And that can the dynamic stays balanced. What you don't want to do is you go too far one way or the other where you've got all choir boys, that's a problem. And if you go the other way, that's a problem as well. So it's that balancing act for a coach and organization.
Joined once again by Eric Mangini. Time now for a big story. Let's move to Arizona, where Kyler Murray made his much-anticipated debut this weekend and looked every bit the number one pick, showing great accuracy and athleticism while completing 6 of 7 passes for 44 yards in his only drive of the game. But he wasn't the only rookie quarterback to impress. Much-maligned Giants first-rounder Daniel Jones was pretty much perfect in his debut, going 5 for 5 for 67 yards and a touchdown. Both guys looked good. One guy's 6'6" or 6'5".
And can move.
I think he's got more upside than the little guy. No disrespect to the little guy, but I always go that route. All right, who has more upside here between Murray and Jones?
I say it's Jones, but not for that reason. I'm a fan of both of their skill set. I remember when Daniel Jones was getting booed, and I was sitting up here defending him through in the midst of the boos, but also because of his skill set. This is a big guy that can move, big guy with an arm, big guy who can really go through the progressions as advertised, but didn't have a great college career and didn't have a lot to stand on, so people thought that they reached. Kyler Murray's going to do his thing. I mean, his ability with his arm, you saw the zip on that ball against the Chargers. On top of the fact that his running is just going to prolong the passing game in terms of opportunities and guys getting open and going outside of conventional passing routes and options, they're both going to be great. But what happens is, with the upside, if they both hit the ground running, Daniel Jones lands in a completely different place, because where is he coming from? Whoa, such a surprise, such a shock, from the boos to the cheers. And I think our reception will be different. Therefore, I'm saying Daniel Jones, just because of the way that he was introduced to the league.
It's so funny how one preseason drive changes the narrative.
Drive.
One preseason drive changes everything. And you can just feel it in New York. Eli goes in and they're upset, and then they have a move the pocket play, and he looks slow on the move the pocket play. And the draw on third down, they're all bullying him, and now Daniel Jones comes in, and there's skepticism. He completes a pass, they start to cheer. You know, by the time they score the touchdown, he's anointed as the, you know, the savior.
So name him.
Yeah, and it's that whole progression all took place in the span of, what, 10 plays. And that's great. And he has a ton of positive traits, and I think he fits this system really well, this West Coast system, which is based on spacing and timing and making the proper reads. It's a really good fit for him. His size is obviously what you look for. You know, with Kyler Murray, though, I really like something about him that you don't see from a lot of young quarterbacks who have the skill set that he has. He has great poise in the pocket for someone who is as good as he is escaping the pocket. There's so many guys that go to that tool quickly, too quickly, because it's the answer they've always gone to. Where I thought in college, and you saw even to some degree in that first drive, there's a patience, there's a poise in the pocket that you don't typically see, which to me gives him a great edge to develop that second pitch that we're always looking for from a lot of other guys. So I like that aspect the most, and I'm really glad he can escape in the pocket, because they're going to struggle on the offensive line in Arizona early.
The other reason, again, I have a height bias. I've been saying I was skeptical of Russell Wilson for a long time. I don't like quarterbacks under 6 feet tall. Having said that, the other reason why I think Jones is in a better spot, I'm not sold on Cliff Kingsbury. I don't see a guy that didn't work in college coming to the NFL and taking on the NFL with some new gimmick offense that he wants to bring in from college. I just don't see it working over the long haul. Might get off to a nice little hot start for a season, a half a season. Come year two, I think Cliff Kingsbury is going to get exposed, and I think that's going to hurt Kyler Murray.
I mean, I can't put the guesswork to that. It's interesting, though. Big 12 players and now Big 12 coaches are making some hay in the NFL as the NFL becomes more of a passing league and more of a collegiate mindset of just getting the ball out there to all your options. So maybe this is the perfect timing. Yesteryear, obviously, it was probably too soon. You didn't have the full embrace of the NFL and its concepts. But now he might have hit at the right time. So with the right player, like he hits, and then the player he's always coveted is available. I think this may be a marriage in heaven.
Yeah, and sometimes that's the most important thing is who you get married to and who, you know, this was obviously an arranged marriage, but it looks like it's an arranged marriage that could work out well for both of them. And I bring this up, you know, or we've talked about this a bunch of times with Bill Belichick. He had one winning season as a head coach in 6 years before he had Tom Brady. You know, Nick Saban came back to pro football as a head coach, and it didn't work out because he didn't really have a quarterback. So if this system and this player and this coach, if they work together, which it looks like they have the potential to based on their shared vision of an offense, that gives them a real chance for some longevity.
All right, Darnell, let's check in with Darnell, see what's popping in the social media lane. We miss anything?
Yes, sir. So Giants fans online noticed that Eli wasn't too happy about Daniel Jones' opening touchdown drive. And Giants former kicker Lawrence Tynes had a good reason why, tweeting out, Giants brass last coaches should start Daniel Jones. If the Giants go 5-11, 6-10 with Eli starting, they'll get fired. They go 5-11 or 6-10 with Jones, they get another year. Thoughts? No matter what, 2020, Jones will be the starter. So, guys, do you expect Eli to start week one?
If Daniel Jones plays one more preseason game that looks anything like this,
one more.
Hell no. One more preseason game that looks anything like the first one, Eli's done. You go with the rookie quarterback.
Yeah, man, Eli is starting week one. I don't give a damn what Daniel Jones does. He could set preseason records, and Eli could throw more interceptions than any quarterback in franchise history in the preseason. It doesn't matter. This is why. You need it to count. Not just matter, but count. It needs to affect the real win-loss column one. And here's the seesaw again. We need to see Daniel Jones build up all his equity and hype and anticipation and imagination, as all backup quarterbacks do. They're so popular because of that. And then you need Eli, in reality, to just lay flat down. And you're just like, now we have the balance we need. We got somebody we could bet on. We don't know what's going to happen. And we got somebody we just can't count on anymore. And Eli did it to himself. Be careful, because time is everything with Eli. You bench him too soon, oh, New York's going to have a response.
Yeah, and Daniel Jones has 10 plays in the first preseason game where there's no game planning on either side. I think he was playing against the second, so it's a little bit early. And even if he has a great preseason, it's still so radically different than anything the regular season presents. Eli's going to be the starter early. You know, it's more a question of at what point does he get pulled, as opposed to whether or not he starts the season or not.
They got stats got to start. To prove you're better off playing your rookie quarterback early and often.
They have stats to prove anything you want to and all we right. can all pull stats out.
I've missed you, Eric. Eric Mangini and Jeff Fisher are back. Let's return to Antonio Brown, whose young tenure with the Raiders has gone even more strangely than most people expected, as AB's already burned his feet and cryotherapy machine and threatened to retire because the league won't let him wear his old helmet, a controversy he appeared to address this weekend in a cryptic Instagram post writing, quote, I love the game. I love the hustle. Youngin got dough. He can leave the league. But if I leave, well, the fans still gonna love me. Man, hashtag paid in full.
Here go that voice again.
Just trying to do my best, David. Look,
before we go there, how about those feet?
Yeah, damn man.
Ouch.
Damn man.
I mean, brutal. I can't put European a pair of running shoes on with a blister. Yeah.
I got a narrative that social media has hijacked the brains of modern athletes and celebrities, and AB is just dealing with the repercussions of that. Am I wrong?
You know, in my household, you're wrong. You know, in my mind, you're wrong. I'm not into blaming the medium. I'm into blaming the user's abuse of that medium. Throughout our lives, we've heard so many things that could just be so damning and damaging. Microwaves. Remember, when you first microwave, you're like, don't stand around. Don't even put it in the kitchen. You're going to die. Go have cancer. Okay, all right. It could go for everything. My 6-month-old right now has a fascination with the sun. Like, she loves looking at the sun. You know what, baby? That's not gonna work. You're not gonna win that one, you know? I don't blame what's established. I blame how you use what is established. I saw J.J. Watt raise $40 million in disaster relief off of social media. I've seen countless times where guys, NFL players, for charity, I'll go out for a charity event, go to a high school, go speak to the kids. One camera, if that, two cameras. Let those same guys get a little dust up with the law, or DUI, whatever. All of a sudden, here it is. Our attention is negative based in the society, and we give a lot of substance and credence to these type of stories instead of the positive ones. But I'm not blaming social media.
I think that social media gives the athletes a voice and gives them a chance to be seen and heard and presented in whatever way they want to be. But it's just like anything else, navigating through that in a responsible way, navigating through that in a positive way, isn't the easiest thing in the world, and especially to do that and control your emotions, because you instantly have that voice and that ability to put that voice out there when maybe you should take a step back, take a breath, and think about what you want to say. So it's a great vehicle if used properly, but we're all getting used to how to use this. And as a parent of three young boys who are dealing with social media and trying to work it out, it's hard. It's hard to know what's right, what's wrong, how much to be involved, how much not to be involved. I think there are elements where it can be a really positive thing, and then you can get bullying. I don't know, and to Marcellus's point, we're all figuring this out. But if used properly, it can be an amazing asset.
That's the key. It's how you use it. Those kind of comments have been around forever. Mm. That comment, well, maybe I've had enough. That's been said 15, 20 years ago in an article, in an interview, but there was a follow-up question. Do you mean that you just might consider retiring after this? There was always a follow-up question. Your phone doesn't ask you a follow-up question. So what you send and put out there is reality. But I totally agree. Let's use it as a tool. Let's help people with it. Let's share our experiences. But it shouldn't be a me thing. It should not be all about me or the user. And that's what I think we're seeing too much of. Too much attention here. And that's where I think we need to draw the line. As an organization, as a football team, you're going to have a policy. You're going to have people come in. You're going to have trainers and people speaking and set. Just like we did years ago when you had a media relations meeting before training camp to talk about how to talk to and deal with the media, you're going to have days upon days of social media training.
You two guys having been coaches, And Jeff, obviously you more recently than Eric, but you don't see it just as a distraction for the players and just as a the thing that bothers me, it's a stage. And when you're on stage, you're performing, you're not authentic. And so I think it baits people into, well, let me go to training camp in a hot air balloon. Oh, I've got a serious injury. The organization's giving me $30 million in new money. I'm gonna post a picture of me smiling with my burnt up feet like this is all a big joke to me. Everything's a stage and inauthentic. That's why I think the people like AB and some other athletes, it causes an inauthentic performance that ends up making them like fools rather than mature adults.
It does, I agree, but it's not across the board. It's not 100%. It's a select few. Okay, and it's the same select few that were making the off-the-record comments way back when. Mm-hmm. It's the same few. So, I think, hopefully he'll learn from this. Someone's got to get a hold of him. If this is the end, you certainly don't want to go out that way.
No.
And with a lot of social media, what I try to explain to the boys it's like a tattoo. Like, it's not going away. You put it out there, it's like it's the equivalent of a tattoo. You may try to explain it away. Your opinions will probably change about it over time, but it just doesn't go away. So you really got to think about what you're putting out there. But when you're 15, when you're 19, when you're 23, when you're 30, all those different periods in your life, you change dramatically. But that tool is still there. And as parents or as coaches or as organizations, you try to help people make the right decision. But if used properly, no one can say, I was misquoted,
yeah.
Right? You have the chance, if you feel that someone has said the wrong thing about you, you have the chance to go put your story out there in the first person, unedited, and not...
Sometimes that's not a good thing, but I hear...
No, sometimes it's not a good thing, but at least you have the right to do it.
Here's what I think, as parents and then as coaches, the other thing about social media, I just think it makes it harder to communicate with younger people. And so athletes have more power than they've ever had in their life, and they're harder to communicate with because I think a lot of the communication on social media is more important than the people that have actually invested in them and are trying to cultivate them and move them along, a coach, a general manager, ownership, hell, a teammate. They're more worried about what people are saying over social media than their own parents, their wives, whatever. That's what my...
I don't feel that. I think this is a part of the evolution where there was a day where the only source of information a lot of times these athletes got was through their coaches, through their program, through their organization, and everyone else could have their perception of them. And there was a day where the guy next door, the gal next door, you never knew what they thought about you. And usually you walked around in high esteem because you were the man on campus. You were the man. And then sports media coverage changed that. Journalists like yourself. And you're like, wait a minute, I did this, but they were perceiving it as this. And now we have player empowerment in terms of their voice with social media. It sounds like the resistance is really to where's the power balance. It used to be with organizations, coaches only. Players didn't have a voice. They just could play and then go home. No one knew. You never walked across and saw Magic Johnson just coming in your world. But now, if you want to know what Magic Johnson's doing, you just go to Magic Johnson. I just think that right now people are just a little upset at who really has the power.
All right, Darnell, we miss anything?
Yes, sir. So earlier today on First Things First, our guy Chris Carter made an interesting point on how Antonio Brown's affecting his Hall of Fame candidacy. Check this out.
Being a member of the Hall of Fame, and I knew it wasn't right, I watched the Hall of Fame keep T.O. out a couple years because of why? Stuff like this, Brian. Yeah. And I know that A.B. is not thinking about that, but T.O. shed the he shed light on the template, which they don't like.
You think AB's antics will actually affect his Hall of Fame candidacy?
Yeah, AB's got some work to do before he's on T.O.'s level, where T.O., by stats and production, was a Hall of Famer, got hurt by his antics. AB's right at the cusp of having that resume that demands Hall of Fame, but these antics, yeah, I think they undermine him because, again, I go back to, did you contribute to a winning environment? That, to me, should be the first question you ask about a Hall of Famer.
Interesting. I think if he just continues, it's a mail-in, he's a Hall of Famer. He's already got a body of work that supports he should be a Hall of Famer. That said, this will affect it. The guy who's like me, who's like, absolutely, he's a Hall of Famer, that guy may go to the fence. And the guy who's already on the fence, like you, he's on the cusp, they're going to hop over the fence on the negative side. Because the Hall of Fame, like you said, is into promoting off-the-field or team-building exercises. Anything that's a detriment to that, they hold you accountable for it. T.O. came up as an example, talking to David Baker before, president of the Hall of Fame committee. T.O. would have been better off if he was arrested, because that's not affecting team building efforts. But T.O. did other things and blew up teams, and that actually was to his detriment.
Yeah, he's on the T.O. trajectory. It's following the same pattern, because T.O. was so talented, and T.O. was so difficult to deal with, just like Antonio Brown, but it just, these other things just kept adding up. At the end of the day, it affected his Hall of Fame candidacy, and I think that's the same way. So it's either going to have to branch off where he either plays worse than he's played now or he stops doing what he's doing now. Otherwise, they're parallel.
If this is his swan song, yes. But I would expect to see another, at least a couple more 1,000-yard seasons and 15, 16 touchdowns and out of him, and then I think he's fine. But if this is the way he goes out, it could affect
him. Joined now by Fox NBA analyst Jim Jackson. Time now for Darnell's question of the day.
I'm doing it anyway.
Take it away.
Yes, sir. We're going to move to LeBron. He raised some eyebrows this weekend after posting this picture on his IG of himself sitting alongside some of the Lakers' all-time greats. You got Magic, Shaq, Kareem, and the GOAT, Kobe Bryant. Writing, quote, sheesh, so honored and grateful to be a part of greatness. P.S., man, oh, man, that starting five versus any franchise all time, let's get it. So I want to ask you guys, do you think it's disrespectful to the other Lakers greats like Jerry West, you know, Wilt, and, you know, Elgin Baylor, the guys who were left out? Is it disrespectful to those guys?
Well, first of all, someone else posted the picture originally.
True.
I get it. Right. A young
there
kid, probably.
There you go.
But someone
facts.
Else.
Facts.
Shaq reposted it.
Yeah. F-A-X. Right.
Got it. Now, what? To me, would I have had the self-awareness if I'm LeBron James to be like, I'm not going to repost it off my deal. I'm going to let other people say that because, again. Because
what?
He's had one non-playoff season with the Lakers. That don't put you up there with these guys in terms of Lakers all-time greats. It doesn't.
Damn. So none of what LeBron did before bleeds into that Lakers.
Hell no, nah, he's wearing a Lakers uniform. Dude, this in Cleveland.
I'm talking about greatness. Like, is LeBron one of the top five players to ever
play?
Oh, damn. Can he be in the top five of their elite organization? That's only
these
one
guys
team.
Won titles with the Lakers.
I get all
titles
of that. But he
with an S.
Okay, look, one, this is not originally from him. Two, this question puts me in a position to disrespect some people who are not in that picture, which is unfair to me, but I'ma still do this. LeBron qualified for that picture. LeBron's greatness does rub with the Lakers' greatness. And guess what? If you think about the top five guys to ever wear that uniform, LeBron James is in one. He's one of those guys, even if he hasn't won a title. And even
he's accomplished nothing in the Lakers uniform, I mean, Marcellus.
He accomplished who? LeBron?
Nothing.
The king wore the uniform.
Yeah,
that's
but
enough.
See, if you're a I get it from a diehard Lakers fan. They ain't having it. Diehard Lakers fans. Because of the past legacies of players that have come in, and even one. I mean, Wilt, if he didn't win, Wilt would be in the conversation, but he didn't win. But he did. Yeah. Jerry West won.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but it goes, I think it goes to the bigger point, too, with LeBron, too. Now, he didn't say, I'm one of the all-time. I'm happy to be in the company. Oh, yeah, what if it was 5-on-5 if these guys would go out and play?
Yep.
Oh, geez, you know, they couldn't stop. But that's basically what he's saying. But if you're a diehard Laker fan, like you're a diehard Clipper fan.
Damn, right.
So in certain things that you do, like LeBron right now, they ain't having it. Even when he came as a Laker, they was like, so what? You ain't better than Kobe?
That mean they ain't open-minded. They already hating the greatness.
Yes, but it's true.
Look, he
but
said,
it's true.
I'm honored. That means y'all gave me something. I'm grateful. Thank you. He's accepting this. He is not demanding that.
I'm with you.
So why
are
we going to be mad at him for this?
I'm not mad, but I said the diehard Laker fans are.
He's honored.
I'm honored because Andy Young put up some little meme or whatever.
Oh, you going to go there?
No, no.
We're going to minimize Andy for his great creative work?
Yeah, we're going to minimize Andy because, listen.
Shout out to Andy Young.
All I would have said, if LeBron's in the right mindset to make Lakers fans happy, but man, this is a great honor, but I have some work to accomplish in this uniform before you put me ahead of Jerry West, Wilt, and these
Nobody
guys.
Try to hear all that. I got some work to put in. I'm the damn king. Put in work. Look, if y'all build around me properly, like we're starting to do,
and we that's got the problem.
That's a problem? I got a problem?
If y'all build around me, I didn't hear Wilt or any, or Shaq or anybody, if y'all build around me, they showed up. And titles follow.
If you go to an entity with some other top journalists and they form this super team of journalists, and you there day one, and let's say subscriptions dip a little, but Whitlock is amongst the greats, and someone puts out a picture with you and Will Bond and all them and say, oh, Whitlock's amongst the greats at this entity. Guess what you're going to say?
I'm going to say pump the brakes.
You're going to say, oh, you ain't going to pump the brakes.
Pump the brakes.
I'm honored and grateful.
I did all that in Kansas City. I need to do some things here at the Washington Post before y'all lump me in with Wilbon and Cornhop.
Wow, subscription's really gonna dip if you do that. That's your response.
Come on, but man.
I'm gonna tell you why.
Why?
Because I'm gonna put the work in. And in a couple years, there won't be no question that I'll belong right there with them.
But there's a couple years
not,
of LeBron
he's
greatness.
Not gonna put the work
in. Let me ask you a question. LeBron greatness
but
don't qualify.
I say that it's always a catch-22 being LeBron. Bro, whatever you say, whatever you do, a lot of things gonna be scrutinized.
Yeah,
I don't care what it is.
Yeah.
I don't care. Even if he is just to post that and just put it there and say, thanks a lot. Thanks for putting that together. He gonna get scrutinized.
He can't even post what he wants to post.
Now, sometimes it's brought on him. I get it.
Yeah.
The position that he's in, anything he does is gonna be scrutinized, overanalyzed. What is he thinking? What does it mean? You can't win in that situation.
So he has to win a championship to even qualify for this conversation.
Absolutely.
I get that. Well, what if he wins one? Is that
Would that be enough?
Laker?
That would put him in. He brought a title to the Lakers. They haven't made the playoffs in 6 straight years, and the man brought a title to the Lakers. I would put him right there.
I want to get into that conversation. One question, direct question: if he gets one, is he leapfrogging Wilt? Is he leapfrogging Jerry West? So when can he ever get to be a Laker great? In your eyes.
One.
Huh?
I just said one.
One.
He came here at 34. No. They haven't made the playoffs in 6 years. If he carries him to a title, hell yeah, he can stand right alongside any
of them. Let me ask you this question. So one title, let's say one title in, 4 years.
Yeah.
One title. compared to Jerry West's legacy?
Say it.
So does he leapfrog that? If he only gets one. I'm talking about the legacy and the lineage of Jerry West.
Leapfrog it? No. But does he belong in the company of all the other Lakers?
Mine is specific. I'm asking you specifically.
Yes.
Does he leapfrog Jerry West?
No.
Why?
Why?
Because his time period is shorter.
No, I get it.
You know why?
But because
you're bringing in the greatness
of the past.
Well, I'm talking about as a Laker, though.
You don't forget the past.
But understand this. I'm talking about this, though. What? But Wilt's legacy is a lot different at Lakers than it is with Philly.
Right.
It's a lot different.
Right.
Okay, and that's why he's not in that picture right there.
Right.
No matter what he did in Philly, the 100 points was in Philly. It wasn't at the Lakers. That's what I'm asking is that specifically for a Lakers, if he only gets one, does he pass Jerry West?
Yeah, and here's why I'm going to say yes. He's dealing with the Genie Bust, Jim Bust Lakers. And to carry that franchise to a title would be historic and a great bowl at the end of LeBron's career that, yes, I think, because again, in terms of LeBron's already a greater player than a lot of these guys. He's other than Kareem, Magic, in my opinion, Kobe, there's an argument.
But we're talking five rings.
I know.
Three rings with the Lakers.
Yeah.
And you said, he shouldn't be in this.
I'm gonna tell you what my problem is, and I guarantee you what Laker fans' problem is with this. Hmm. Again, LeBron has made several comments over the last 2 years. I'm greater than Michael Jordan. I've done my legacy is full. I'm done. He's still in that mindset of like, it's over for me. Put me with the retired all-time greats. I'm right there. It's over. Nothing I do from here on matters.
I hear that point.
And if I'm a Lakers fan, that's fingernails on a chalkboard to me. Whitlock and Wiley, Eric Mangini is back with us. Let's move to Tom Brady, who sparked a number of rumors last week as a report broke that his $40 million Boston home had just hit the market. The news had people speculating that Brady was readying for retirement or even planning to find a new team next season. But the quarterback says it's all much ado about nothing.
I certainly hope he shouldn't read into anything. I mean, I think it's, it takes a long time to sell a house. I don't know if you guys, my house is a little bit of expensive one, so it doesn't quite, fly off the shelf in a couple of weeks. There's no point in worrying about things like that because there's so many what ifs and hypotheticals and this and that and this and that. If you spend all your time and energy on those things, you miss track of what's really most important, which is what's happening right now. And, this is where I want to be. This is, this is the team that I want to be a part of and leading. And I'm really excited about doing that. And there's really not much more to read into it than that.
Tom insisted several times that he still hopes to play until age 45 in that same interview. However, I hear all of this as this is Tom Brady's final season and he's prepared for that. He hopes to play until he's 45, but I think he's preparing for this to be his last season.
I didn't hear that. I heard a lot of my coaches who used to always say, don't get bored with success. And that doesn't land properly when you're an active player all the time. You hear like, what do you mean don't get bored with success? And that was a way that they really wanted us to just focus in on the process, on the fundamentals, and the things that you are supposed to do the right way, which at times get tedious and at times, let's be real, get boring. You want to get creative. You want to get flex. You want to get funky with it. You want to get outside the playbook and do your own thing. He's like, don't get bored with success. And Tom Brady just gave us an enlightenment to his genius in his process. So meticulous. And it's boring. So what we do is we speculate. Confirmation bias. If you think it's over for Brady, you put your house on the market. We see it. And if you don't think it's over for him, you're like, oh, no franchise tag. He's going to go somewhere else. It's whatever you want to do with it. But this dude just took us deep into a place that has really contributed to all his success. And what I heard from it is a guy who's saying one day at a time, one play at a time, one year at a time, and then at that time, I'll tell you what's next. It's not for everybody, but it's for Brady.
Yeah, Marcellus has nailed it. And one of the greatest gifts that Bill Belichick has is the ability to get a group and to get individuals to focus on the task at hand at the moment. And he'd always say, look, you can't worry about the past because there's nothing you can do about it. You can't change it. He said, you can't worry about the future. You're not Nostradamus. You don't know what's going to happen. So the only thing that you can control is this moment right now. And Tom's been with Bill for a long, long time, and he's heard that message over and over again, and he truly believes in that, and that's how he lives. Him putting his house on the market, it is. It's an expensive house. There aren't that many buyers. You need to get on the market because it's not going to sell right away if you're eventually going to move. And I don't think there's anything deeper to that than what he talked about in the Men's Health article, where his wife grew up in a very untraditional way. It wasn't you go to this school and you live in this town and then you go to a high school and then you go to college. She lived all over the world. So there may be some fusion of lifestyles here in terms of what they are going to do in the future with their family and their approach.
All right, Eric, you've been a head coach. Take us organizationally, though. Help me understand why they agreed to a contract that lets him walk after this season. No franchise tag, no transition tag. Why that? Why shouldn't I read something into that?
Because they're at the point right now where every year is a one-year deal. And it doesn't mean that they're looking to get rid of him, and it doesn't mean that he's looking to leave. But the best way for them to operate is for them to each have the ability to make that decision at the end of the year. And it works well from a salary cap perspective. It works well from a leverage perspective for Tom Brady. So each year they can go into a new set of negotiations based off of where the previous year was and work off those one-year contracts and set it up any way that they want to set it up to help the salary cap out.
To me, it shows incredible self-awareness as a great player, maybe the GOAT of all time, and an organization. They're being real. Who doesn't want to sit across from someone at the negotiation table and while you're talking, they have that self-awareness? Look, I am 42. I get it. I'm not going to try and take advantage of you and say, sign me for 3 more years. Who knows where that cliff is and I'm going to fall off it or not. And at the flip side, they're saying, look, Ty, we appreciate your services. But there's a part of this organization that has to prepare for post-Tom Brady. And we want to be able to do that and be fluid in that moment. So they're like, all right, let's just take it year by year. I eat what I kill, and I will just go out there and keep killing.
Well, the other part of Bill Belichick's gift set is his ruthless ability to move on from players, regardless of who they are. And I was just at the Hall of Fame induction, and Richard Seymour was there, and Deion Branch, and there, Rod. Who else was there? Rodney Harrison was there.
Ty Law.
Lawyer Malloy was there. Ty Law. All those guys were there. All great Patriots. All built the Patriot way and all moved on from when it became in the best interest of the team. And that may sound like it's way too harsh, but that's what's allowed them to compete year in and year out. And that's a real strength that he has.
I made the argument last week that as much as Belichick believes in the Patriot way, so does Tom Brady, and that Tom Brady is self-aware and confident enough to say, hey, look, if it could happen to Richard Seymour, if it could happen to Ty Law, it could happen to me.
Yeah, it can happen to anyone. And that also may be part of what drives him constantly. When you know, and Jerry Rice used to talk about that all the time, even at the height of his greatness, he used to feel like he was going to get cut every day, or he talked about training with that perspective. Well, with Tom's situation, it's real. Like, if he comes back and he's not the guy that they hope he is, they're going to look to move on, even though he is Tom Brady.
All right, before we go, I'd like to address the major challenge facing Miami Dolphins rookie head coach Brian Flores. He will not be judged or treated fairly by the American sports media or a handful of the players on his roster. Liberals in the media and a select few black players on the Dolphins roster will penalize Flores with a black tax. It has already begun. Last week, Dolphins receiver Kenny Stills tweeted criticism of Dolphins owner Steven Rouse for hosting a re-election fundraiser for Donald Trump. I don't have a problem with Stills using social media to question his boss, but I don't work for Steven Ross. If I did, if I were in Flores' shoes, I'd have a problem, a major one. Steven Ross is one of 3 NFL owners who employs a black head coach in 2019. Other than starting quarterback, being an NFL head coach is probably the most coveted job in all of sports. The job pays exceptionally well. It gives the coach an amazing platform to impact the careers of his assistants. If he's successful,
Flores could be the next Tony Dungy and create a coaching tree of the next wave of black head coaches. Stephen Ross is an owner of several businesses, and his highest profile employee is Brian Flores. No one should be surprised or upset that Flores advised Steeles to speak privately with Ross about his political donations. The only reason Flores' advice is controversial is because Flores is black and the liberals in the media want to enforce a policy that all black people must agree with their exaggerated narrative about our current president. Deadspin, which has employed one token black writer in its 13-year history, published pieces attacking Flores and Ross, who knows what Flores thinks of Trump. But given the enormity of the job Ross bestowed Flores, doesn't it make sense for Flores to be loyal to Ross in the first 6 months of holding said job? Human beings are far more complex than the way they're being painted in the modern American media. The people drawing lines in the sand and assigning good guys and bad guys are the all-knowing supremacists. They're better and smarter than I am. I'm simple. I want Brian Flores to be successful. The liberal mainstream media allegedly care about the NFL giving black coaches more opportunities to elevate to head coach. I use the word allegedly because I don't believe they care. I believe it's a smokescreen, a convenient tool the media use to paint NFL ownership as racist and fool players into obeying media commands. Flores is no fool. He's loyal to the person invested in his success. That's not the media, Kenny Stills, or the president. It's Stephen Ross. More Speak for Yourself after this. Jeff Fisher's back with us. Let's move to the Cowboys, who still have yet to sign Dak Prescott to a big new contract, but apparently it's not for lack of trying. According to former NFL executive Mike Lombardi, Dak actually rejected an offer from the Cowboys worth around $30 million per year, which would have put him in the top six highest paid quarterbacks in the league. Mm. Jeff, I've been arguing with Marcellus here for months.
So go to coach first.
Contention is that if Dak keeps this up, it's going to hurt locker room chemistry. If he wants too much money, the guys in that locker room, if it costs them Ezekiel Elliott or Amari Cooper or Byron Jones on the other side, this could disrupt locker room chemistry if Dak wants too much money.
Yeah, but what's Dak saying? Either like we get the deal done or I'm just going to play the year out? Is that what he's saying, right? He's going to play out the year? That's so average, I mean, I don't think it's going to create – these things don't create problems in locker rooms and things like that. I don't think we need to get caught up in the he said, she said stuff in the negotiations. Cowboys will get their thing done. Okay, the Cowboys have some work to do as far as negotiations are concerned with Dak and with the receiver, and now you got the running back out. And oh, by the way, there's a couple of good defensive players that are coming up next year. So they've got to get this thing done. So I think we need to caution, remind ourselves not to get caught up in this negotiation through the media thing, because these are rumors, first off. And all it's going to take is another million that puts him. If he's top six, he wants to get in the top five. It just takes another million. He's top five, deal's done.
Yeah, I'm going to harp on the word range when I hear Michael Lombardi say this will be nuts. Range. Yeah. Okay, so look, we all were taught in math when you're generalizing, round up. So range could be 26 on up. Or it could be where at the top is Aaron, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady. Those are 35 on down. Now, we got to get specific because we're not going to generalize if I'm Dak Prescott. I want to stay specific, and the devil is in the details. Wait a minute. You're trying to tell me that I could be somewhere between Matthew Stafford at $27 million, Jimmy G, Kirk Cousins at $28 million, in the range, Matt Ryan, Carson Wentz? Okay. We already went through our Carson Wentz, Dak Prescott three-year career numbers, and Dak is smoking Carson Wentz in most categories. Now, so Dak and his agent are sitting there like, I'm better than him with actual numbers, but then the numbers you're giving me in the range are not better than him specifically? I got a problem with that. I'm going to sit at this table until you talk specifically about how I am better in contract than the Carson Wentz at $32 million. This range could be too wide for Dak Prescott.
And Jeff, now he's gotten to where I think there's a potential problem. This is what I believe. It's tough for you to say it. But if Dak Prescott walks into that Cowboys locker room,
making $32 million a year, there are going to be some guys in that locker room like, are you kidding me? And now I can't pay X, Y, and Z, Byron Jones, these guys?
Well, that's the issue, if they can't go ahead and get these other things done. But that's the business. That's the business every year in every building. You can't keep everybody. You're going to lose people. People are going to pay for somebody that you like but you couldn't sign. So that's the business. I just don't see that happening in the locker room. I think the guys, they respect him. He's a cowboy. I think people see him as a cowboy for life. Yeah. I think his teammates go, yeah, pay the dude, and let's go win some games.
Yeah, and he's won a lot of games. Plus, we all know the hierarchy. Like, when you're a quarterback, we know what's coming with it. Like, the love, the fame, the glory, and the dough. I don't think...
Who else would give Dak $30 million?
On the free agent
on
market?
On the free agent market. Who would give Dak $30 million?
Some flameouts must occur with some franchise quarterbacks, but look, we saw a situation where a Case Keenum was thought of very highly. In 1 year, gone.
He'd get 30.
And it wasn't the salary cap that is going to now go up $20 million since Case Keenum was signed. So it's the inflation of the position, inflation of the game. I don't think I would have a problem.
He's a short Blake Bortles. No one. That he's better Blake Bortles. I'm sorry for saying that. Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about Antonio Brown.
We're all aware.
Uncle Jimmy, you got any? Who's your big dummy of the day?
Big dummy of the day, I'm sorry, nephew, but it's going to go to you for your embrace, for your stating that you got a problem with people being short. Hey, you got a problem with short people? Maybe that's why you're still single. I don't know. You got a problem.
All right. Here's a highlight from our discussion earlier about Antonio Brown. Brown, the Raiders' frostbitten, helmet-phobic receiver, is dumber. A sixth-round pick out of Central Michigan, Brown has made more money than he could have ever rightfully imagined. I don't blame him for being delusional.
Who has the most to prove? It's Antonio Brown, because he doesn't have the same guarantees and security as a John Gruden.
All right, Uncle Jimmy, what's your take on AB and his feet problem in Oakland?
Dr. Jimmy.
First of all, I'd like to say that I've been sent here completely unsolicited to give my totally biased medical opinion.
Okay.
And funny. This is in regard to, as we said, the frostbite injuries that have been attained by Antonio Brown.
Oh, man.
See, you have to understand that Antonio Brown is suffering from frostbite, and it's now going into some of the more extreme forms of the frostbite. Frostbite, as some of you know, can lead to gangrene. Gangrene leads to blisters. When the blisters bust, they begin to ooze, and they start giving you this milky discharge and flaky.
All right. Yeah. All right.
And when you get that, that's when it's safe to say that you've developed an infection.
Mm.
If you develop an infection in your feet, it's safe to say that shortly thereafter that you're going to find yourself wearing Kunta Kinte's old cleats.
Man, stop.
And then you will spend the rest of your career complaining about not making it to the motherland, i.e. the Hall of Fame. Well, I'm trying to tell you, this is what happened to the Raiders. I'm here to tell you that I have through knowledge reports that the Raiders were completely aware that Antonio Brown had an STD.
What?
It's a Steeler team disorder. They all, and I'm just going to be honest with you, this happened. The Raiders hooked up with AB, and unluckily for them, they hooked up with him during an outbreak. I'm going to be very honest with you. They say that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. But I'm here to tell you that they also say that the road to heaven is paved with banana pudding, which might not be true, too, because otherwise more people would be there. Bottom line, you guys, fantasy football's coming up.
Yeah.
Antonio Brown's going to be on somebody's draft board, and everybody will choose Antonio Brown, like him or not.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't.
No?
No.
No. No.
I figured you was going to say, let me ask you a question.
Bring it up.
So are you telling me that if AB was a bad female sitting at the bar in Las Vegas, and you knew who she was, you knew her work, you seen all of her videos, you know her work like you know the palm of your hand. you, if you had the chance, you would step up to her to get lost in that sauce just like us. Well, that's what the Raiders did. They got lost in the sauce. Only problem is they beginning to see them symptoms a little sooner than what they thought they was gonna see them. We all seen them blisters on AB's feet. You know what I'm saying? AB, they got medication for that.
Oh, man.
You, but here's the deal. You and the Raiders are stuck together. Okay? Let me let y'all in on a little secret.
What?
Quickly.
That's why they kicked his ass out of Pittsburgh.
What?
He infected the whole locker room.
I got AB at a full-blown dumpster fire. He's a 32.
Just nasty.
Dropped him in job performance. Dropped him in all-time greatest. Dropped him in authenticity.
What?
32 dumpster fire. The internet agreed.
Burning. Burning.
Oh, I didn't expect that, Dr.
I
Jimmy.
Feel
but,
that
I got to go up in job performance. Way
burn.
To take 10 challenge with the NFL.
The
fraud lets you have 1 year with a bad helmet. Nobody, that makes no sense.
Whole world agrees you. With me.
Yeah, and
he's got Steeler nobody. Team disorder, just like the doctor said.
The gates to heaven are narrow. Few come between.
So. All right, we'll
let
see you tomorrow.